makes its clients feel better because they feel there is a safety net. Ah, yes. Less worries equals feels better. 2, a client selects a vendor because she feels he is nicer, more trustworthy, better looking, smarter, more courteous, or any of a million other variables. The net effect is that a client feels better working with this vendor, and she selected him based on that feeling. 3, a doctor makes you feel better. At least she is supposed to. And when she doesn't, you are less desirous of maintaining the relationship and vow to go elsewhere. But it is time consuming to go elsewhere, and that doesn't make you feel better. So you stay with that lousy doctor because that does feel better. 4, we put others down because it puts us up. We feel better, temporarily. 5, a tax man does not make you feel better. So you seek out an accountant or H&R Block, and that makes you feel better. Not much better, but better nonetheless, until you get the bill. 6, a garbage man takes our rotting garbage away. We feel better. 7, you go to a restaurant and order your favorite hamburger. You feel better. They serve it undercooked. Not good. So you consider complaining and asking for a new one. That would make you feel better. But you fear the cook will spit a phlegm bomb dead center on your patty. That would be horrible. So chewing down on raw meat and not saying anything makes you feel better. It's gross, but you avoided confrontation, so you feel fine. 8, even this stinking book was purchased in order to feel better. You only keep listening if it continues to make you feel better. If the book doesn't make you feel better, you'll stop listening. Again, you feel better. To launch and maintain a successful business, you need to always make your clients feel better than your competitor does. Always. Your area of innovation: quality, price, or convenience. If there can be only one thing, what are you going to be known for? Inevitably, to lead an industry, or even to have a single sale for that matter, you need to be better, faster, or cheaper. You need to have a unique, desirable attribute that no one else offers. This attribute will always be a perceived differentiator of quality, price, or convenience. Where in your business can you offer quality, convenience, or price that is far better than the competition? Once you find it, pick just one and stick with it for the life of your company. Hint: you must pick the category that fits seamlessly with your beliefs and your immutable laws. Then do everything in your power to be the best at it and always, always improve on it. By selecting your key differentiator, you have determined your area of innovation, the way to consistently ensure you're the one making your customer feel better. Customers will return to you again and again in search for that feeling. If you are Walmart, your area of innovation is price. To continue to dominate the industry, Walmart must have an unrelenting focus on providing the best price. If it gets off the price track, it's in trouble. Could you imagine Walmart offering, for example, a convenient movie rental service that could compete with Blockbuster and Netflix or Redbox without offering an amazing price advantage? Oh, wait a minute. Walmart did do that, and it failed miserably. Walmart's movie download service launched in February 2007, and by December of that same year, it was toast. A total failure caused by Walmart's focus on convenience rather than price. Walmart has grown explosively because it is all about the lowest price first. Everything else, including quality and convenience, comes second. Even the mighty Walmart could fail if the company loses focus and compromises price in an effort to improve another area of innovation. Of course, if it increases quality while first ensuring it leads on price, it wins. McDonald's leads on convenience. The day they start offering burgers that are cooked to order, quality, they are in trouble because you will have to wait longer and convenience will be compromised. But if they can knock out a cooked to order burger faster than they prepare their current burgers, then they really have a win. How would you like yours in 5 seconds flat? Mercedes leads on quality. Can you imagine Mercedes coming out with a competitor to the Toyota Corolla? It would lose, so it doesn't. Dick's Last Resort restaurant in South Carolina also leads on quality. but it sure isn't the quality of food. Instead, it is the quality of the experience. The waitstaff insults guests, mocks their food orders, and forces them to wear goofy hats. It's definitely not for people without a good sense of self-deprecating humor. But if you like that type of atmosphere, Dick's is the highest quality experience you can find anywhere. How many restaurants regularly get 5-star ratings on service and atmosphere when their waiters inevitably say, "Is that all you're going to give me as a tip, you cheap bastard?" The area of innovation is where you need to put all of your energy and inventiveness. If your company leads on quality, for example, you need to constantly focus on how to improve quality. Should you ever ignore or compromise quality in an effort to save money or reduce price point or make things more convenient or for any reason, you're screwed. The consumer, who has been buying on quality, will notice it immediately, feel compromised, and typically leave or start the search for an alternative. Encyclopedia Britannica had a miserable collapse, particularly since it was the beloved American icon. Believe it or not, those giant books were once considered a convenient way to find information. Britannica's area of innovation was convenience, even going so far to sell door-to-door and deliver right to your living room. But when the customer could benefit from improved convenience by getting their encyclopedias on CD-ROM, Britannica just kept printing books. Britannica failed to stay true to and continually raise the bar in its area of innovation. The company was quickly surpassed by Microsoft's Encarta CD-ROM, which was later made obsolete by Wikipedia, all in the name of the same area of innovation, convenience. Wikipedia raised the bar so high on convenience, instantaneous and unlimited information, that Encarta didn't have a chance. It also raised the bar ridiculously high on price, free, and quality, is a living file and constantly updates and improves. I can't wait to see who kicks Wiki's ass. And trust me, someone will. Maybe it will be you. What is your area of innovation? Is it in keeping with your immutable laws, your internal rules? Does it ring true? Commit to leading in quality, price, or convenience, and make sure you pick just one to focus your attention on. Stay in the ballpark with the other two areas, but never, ever compromise your area of innovation in an effort to excel in all three. When you diligently and consistently work to raise the bar in your area of innovation, effectively competing with yourself, you stay out of your competitor's reach. Who's your ideal customer? You are deep into the book now, and this is the first time that we're going to start really digging into identifying your customer. Traditional business training and common logic says that this is your starting point of launching a company. That couldn't be more dead wrong. Starting a company is all about serving your needs, your beliefs, and your values first. By this point, you should have a strong knowledge of yourself and a clear vision for what you want. This is if you followed the action steps at the end of each chapter. You are now ready to identify your ideal customer. Market demographics, trend analysis, and other statistical measures are important, but they only scratch the surface. They surely don't position you to launch successfully. As with everything else in business, you need to start by knowing your destination first. In this case, you need to define your customer so well that you can pick him or her out of a crowded room of thousands of people. Paul Scheider can pick a perfect customer out of a crowd in seconds flat. The founder of Hedgehog Leatherworks, the leading provider of leather survival products, talk about a tight niche, Paul defined his ideal customer early on in his business and experienced phenomenal growth just by knowing his customer like the back of his hand. After launching his company from his college dorm room, Paul soon realized that his sporadic sales were coming from a wide mix of customers. Some were in the military, some were hunters, others were survivalists, a few were collectors, and still more were totally undefined. Paul knew he couldn't possibly cater to so many different types of customers, so he compiled a list of 100 adjectives and descriptive phrases that defined his perfect customer. He identified his customer's values, specifically those he held in common with them, as well as how they looked, acted, and reacted. Paul even knew his customers' favorite movies. With those details documented, Paul simply kept his eyes open. And whenever he noticed someone that fit his description of an ideal Hedgehog Leatherworks customer, he struck up a dialogue with them. Sure enough, knowing exactly what he was looking for, Paul quickly met many people with similar interests and values, a few of whom were very influential people within his niche. These people became his friends, made introductions, and brought in more people with similar interests and values. Paul's business took off and has grown explosively ever since. Within 2 years of his launch, Hedgehog Leatherworks is recognized as the world leader in high-end performance leather sheaths. Paul has a loyal customer base that floods him with unsolicited testimonials and thank you notes. Handling all of his testimonials has actually become a challenge for Paul. Now that's a problem to aspire to, wouldn't you say? Paul Scheider is a toilet paper entrepreneur. You too need to know your customer with this level of detail because, simply put, it makes it much easier to locate, market to, and then sell to them. Consider the tickler questions I'm about to read when defining your ideal customer. The goal here is to start broad and then systematically funnel down to the exact customer who will most appreciate, connect with, and benefit from what you plan to offer. Trust me, your ideal customer will share your immutable laws, tremendously value your area of innovation, and be a raving fan of your product or service. This list of questions is far from complete and is simply a starting point. You need to ask an exhaustive series of questions. You will have completed the task of identifying an ideal customer when you are able to walk through a crowd and identify him by the way he looks, behaves, talks, smells, etc. If everyone in a crowd is your potential customer, you are way too broad. But if one out of 1,000 is clearly an ideal customer, you may have found your perfect niche. The tickler questions. Where do they live and why? What do they cherish? Why? What do they hate? Why? What is their favorite TV show? Why? Do they even watch TV? Why not? What would they not be caught dead doing? What is the most important part of their daily routine? Do they own a car? And if so, what is the make and model? If they own a car, how aggressively do they drive it? What pisses them off over and over again about your industry? Are they married or single? Are they gay or straight? How old are they? How old do they look? How old do they act? Know your prospects better than any of your competitors, and you will have an easier time finding them. When they become customers, you will be able to relate to them better. They will come to you easily and stay happily. As a final thought, recognize that by knowing one group so well, you will not know other groups at all. You may actually upset some people. This is okay. It's actually desirable. You want to polarize people. You want clients who love you and others who don't. If you get the love-hate reaction, you know you are on to something. Since your focus is causing exclusion and discomfort with some. Better yet, the people who love you now will have a reason to defend you, further entrenching their adoration because you share a common enemy. Serve a narrow niche and facilitate growth by exclusion. You are really, really good at very, very little. Many entrepreneurs get in the habit of saying, "I can do it," to everyone and everything. I call this the "I can" syndrome. While it is true you can do many things, you suck at most of them. All of us are naturally talented at only a few things and are mediocre or bad at everything else. Entrepreneurial mastery requires that you learn what your strengths are, few as they may be, and exploit them to the fullest. All the other areas where you are not strong need to be handled by other people who are super talented in those areas. I recognize that that is easier said than done. During the early stages of launching your company, you do, in fact, need to do everything. In addition to stretching every penny you have, you also need to learn the requirements of your business. Over time, as you start to generate cash flow, you need to introduce other experts. As you can afford it, bring on extraordinary staff and or services that can replace you in the areas that consume a majority of your time and where your talents are weakest. For example, if you have poor attention to detail, which most entrepreneurs do, you will probably want to hire an excellent part-time bookkeeper. Maybe contract with a personal assistant service to help with scheduling and small tasks. Discover the areas where you are naturally talented. This requires stepping away from the moment and looking at your abilities and experiences objectively. Consider your answers to these questions to discover your strengths. 1. What do you do that you look forward to? If you're consistently enjoying doing something, it may be one of your strengths. 2. What activity do you push off to do last? When you routinely avoid a certain task, there's a good chance it may be one of your weaknesses. 3. In what area do you pick up knowledge very easily? If you catch on to something quickly, it's probably one of your strengths. 4. In what areas do you struggle? These are almost definitely weaknesses. 5. What activities give you satisfaction, a sense of worth, and just makes you feel good? These are probably strengths. 6. When a mere 3 sheets are dangling, what is your instinctive approach? Do you joke your way out? Do you work with atypical resources? Do you scream for help? Do you dive into the shower? Or do you say, screw it, and just stand up and walk out? The way you handle crises is also one of your strengths. In every situation in life, our natural tendency is to lean toward our strengths. But this is typically at a subconscious level. Often we let our logic redirect our course and do what is not natural. We actually hamper ourselves by trying to improve our weaknesses because our mind is telling us this is what we must do. Listen to your internal guidance, your emotions. If it feels good, if it feels natural, if it feels right, it almost definitely is. Your emotions consistently point you toward your strengths. Build on them. Know that you have a super strength that no one else will ever match. You care more about your business than anyone else. Your company is your baby, your mission, and your passion. For some of your colleagues, it may just be a job. They may admire and respect you, but at the end of the day, it may still be just a job. You alone have the responsibility of ensuring everyone and everything are well cared for and moving forward. Take action now. The next actions are huge, unbelievably huge, huge and crucial to your success. You may even need some extra time to complete them, and your answers may change as you discover more about yourself and your business. Just dig in and see what you can get done in half an hour. If you've got more time, by all means, work at it. 1. Flip back to the section on the Focus 5 and read it again, or in this case, listen again. Figure out your Focus 5, work in the equation until you come up with a niche you can dominate, but in which you can still earn at least $5 million annually after no more than 5 years in business. Do not skip this step. 2. Building on your immutable laws, choose one area of innovation. Consider all the options before you commit. 3. How well do you know your ideal customer? Write a list of characteristics that describe your ideal customer in detail. Write down to his or her underwear. Go with your gut and try not to judge your list. You might be surprised at how many attributes you come up with right off the bat. Chapter 5. It's all about regularity. Winning is not a sometime thing. You don't win once in a while. You don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit. Unfortunately, so is losing. Vincent Lombardi. How many times have you heard about the importance of a detailed business plan? Make sure you have 10 years of financials. Make sure you can make $100 million capturing only 0.1% of the potential market. Make sure you have a strong management team with a strong track record. Make sure you can show clearly where your customers will be coming from and why. Everyone tries to tell you that you need a winning business plan if you ever hope to go anywhere with your business. Well, I'm here to tell you that a business plan is a total waste of time. Almost every business plan I've ever seen includes excruciating, eye-bleeding detail, discusses irrelevant experience, and is supported by a fantasy management dream team willing to work without pay for 6 months. But that's understandable because within 6 months, the hypothetical projections show that everyone will be making millions of dollars in salary. Yeah, right. Once a company is up and running, the business plan rarely, if ever, receives a second glance, let alone an update. Instead, it ends up collecting dust on the shelf. What a waste. All that time, effort, and money spent developing a work of fiction that winds up in the recycle bin. Even if you choose to squander your money on business planning software in an effort to streamline the process, you'll still end up with a totally useless document. Three documents will launch your business faster and better than any business plan. With these powerful documents, your growth will be limited only by your beliefs and focus. Trash your business plan right now, because I'm about to teach you the power of three sheets documents: your prosperity plan, quarterly plan, and daily metrics. Don't believe you can plan a successful business using just three documents? Read the Declaration of Independence, a one-page document that launched a powerful free nation and inspired the entire world. A junk man's $1 billion prosperity plan. Junk isn't the most glamorous business in the world. Would you believe in the summer of 1998, some guy was daydreaming about how he could change the world by being a junk man? Well, it's true, and his name was Brian Scudamore of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, based out of Vancouver, British Columbia. The idea came to him while fishing one summer day. As thoughts of his life drifted through his mind, Brian reviewed his past 10 years of entrepreneurialism. He'd built a small rubbish removal business in the past decade, and it was generating a respectable, but small, $1 million plus in annual revenue. Respectable, but not satisfying. That's when it hit him. Brian dropped his pole and began writing down his expectations of himself and his company. Not mere wishes or hopeful thoughts, but a real vision of his future. He started writing a painted picture, as he came to name it, describing what the future of his company would be like. The document contained grand statements, unrealistic goals, and unheard-of expectations. But the document was extremely real to Brian. Every time he read the document, his heart would beat faster and his emotions soared. He kept on improving it and improving it. Within a day, he had prepared a document that was so compelling to him, so true to his hardwired purpose in life, he just knew this had to become a reality. Like the Declaration of Independence, Brian's document contained ideal statements that rang true with him. He made commitments that were outrageous to others, just like the small group of men who declared the ragtag United States Army would defeat the military juggernaut of England. When Brian returned from his weekend trip to the cabin, he had his painted picture, his prosperity plan, in hand. He set to action immediately, and slowly but surely hired only those few people who believed in the same vision. The non-believers went their own way. Fast forward 5 years. Brian's company, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, went from $1 million in annual revenue to $100 million in annual revenue. I did not misspeak. $100 million in annual revenue. His newest tweak to his prosperity plan has him doing $1 billion in annual revenue by 2014. I have a good feeling it's going to happen. He absolutely believes it is. Brian Scudamore is a toilet paper entrepreneur. Create a prosperity plan. A prosperity plan is the overarching, never-changing, but often tweaked, document that describes what your company is all about. It is your written commitment to your company goals and the standards you will abide by to achieve them. The prosperity plan replaces the most powerful part of a business plan, the section that often gets ignored. It establishes the foundation of beliefs for your company and generates excitement. But business plans get shelved and then forgotten. Because your prosperity plan is accessible to you at all times, it re-energizes you. It affirms your beliefs. It realigns with your vision. Writing a prosperity plan is the very first step to starting your company. Creating this document comes before you legally form and register your business, even before you name your company. Your prosperity plan details your vision for your company. It defines everything you and your business are about, everything you and your business stand for. How can you have a good company name, a strong marketing message, or accomplish anything with consistency without knowing where you are headed? You can't. That's why the prosperity plan is the first order of business. The formation of your company is all about you. This is so important to understand. It is so different from what we've been taught that I need to say it again. Your company is first, foremost, and exclusively all about you. Your customers are critical, but they are second to your wants because if you're not happy, they won't be either. Your company depends on effective colleagues, but they won't perform if you are a miserable SOB. The prosperity plan must be all about you and what you envision to be the best, happiest, most perfect scenario for you. The prosperity plan must be visceral. It must touch you at an emotional level, but it doesn't need to touch outsiders at an emotional level. The prosperity plan for my company is powerful. It speaks to my emotions, and I believe in it emphatically. When you read it, you may feel it's lame. You might not be moved by it. It might not even make sense to you, but that's cool because you are you. What matters most is how I feel about my plan and that I believe in it to my core. Now, of course, if you read the document and also believe in it, I want to speak with you. We might be great colleagues. The prosperity plan is also your statement to the world about your beliefs and how you plan to stay true to them. Some people will reject it. Most people will disregard it. But some will be drawn to it. The people who are drawn to your plan are the clients, colleagues, investors, and vendors with which you will be able to do great things. Here are the key elements of a visceral, motivating prosperity plan. Life mission. What is your life's purpose? Not your company mission, but your life mission. One informs the other. So as we discussed in part one, figure out what your heart screams for you to do first. Then, figure out how that mission can be played out in a profitable business. If you relentlessly commit to doing what you love, your business will be a force to be reckoned with. As you discover your life's mission, you will probably find your tagline, the short phrase that defines your purpose. Your company name may come to you then, too. The key to discovering these components is that they must always resonate strongly with you. Don't worry about anyone or anything else at this phase. Defining your life mission is not an easy exercise. Actually, most of us go through life never discovering it, let alone thinking about it. Here's how you do it. First, you must believe you have a life mission, albeit you may have a different name for it, and that you will discover it. Second, you need to seek it out. Some effective actions you can take. 1. Think about and document your life from the day you were born until today. What were your happiest moments? Why? Would you like to have those feelings and experiences again? 2. Write a list of adjectives that you would like people to use when describing you. 3. Ask your friends to tell you one thing you are absolutely the best at. 4. Write your own eulogy. What stamp would you like to leave on the world? 5. Put a picture of yourself on the cover of your favorite magazine. What magazine is it? Why? What is the title placed above you on the cover? Why? 6. If you could be a guest or host of any TV show in the world, which one would it be? Why? What would you talk about? 7. Who are the 10 people you admire most? Why? 8. Write a list of 100 things that you enjoy doing or would like to incorporate into your life. 9. What upsets you the most about the world? Do you have ideas about how to make it better? How would you feel if you were doing that? 10. What have you always wanted to do or experience? Destiny. Once you know your life's mission, you need to identify your destiny. This is the painted picture that Brian Scudamore wrote on that day he was fishing, or the vision document that many business minds talk about. The name you give it is irrelevant. The fact that you have a crystal clear image of what your company will be is the critical part. Pick a date in the future when you see your company achieving its most notable successes. In my case, I picked 10 years out from the day I wrote it. Think of your destiny as your ultimate goals and those of your company. Very often they are linked. Write them in as much detail as possible, including how your life will be different when you reach your destiny. How will you know you arrived at your goals? How will you measure your success? Will it be in terms of revenue or brand recognition or market domination or something else entirely? Your destiny must be absolutely 100% believable to you. If you write lofty ideas, unrealistic claims, and unachievable targets in your destiny, you will still achieve them if you truly believe them to your core. But if you write lofty ideas, unrealistic claims, and unachievable targets, and believe them to be lofty, unrealistic, and unachievable, you don't have a chance. Go back to the drawing board and redo your destiny until you believe it to your inner core. Don't worry about how you're going to get there. I will show you the method in a moment. Simply ensure that the thought behind the thought believes it's possible, or better yet, probable. It must be hitting at your emotional core. You've got to feel it. It must be visceral. Area of innovation. As we discussed in the previous chapter, your company can lead in only one area of innovation: quality, price, or convenience. Pick the category that intrinsically feels right. Then dig deep into that category and define exactly how you're going to be remarkably different than the competition. What is the area of innovation where you just can't be touched? What specifically do customers rave about when they talk about you? This is your area of innovation, and you must commit to leading in this area for the life of your business. If you're just launching your business, choose an area of innovation that plays to your strengths. For example, if you've got a fantastic product idea that will surpass the competition by leaps and bounds, you might choose quality as your area of innovation. Or if you know you have the negotiating skills to keep costs down, you might choose price as your area of innovation. Immutable laws. You have certain hardwired beliefs that can't, won't, and shouldn't be changed. These beliefs are something we are born with, and they continue to intensify over time. Not all of us share the same beliefs, and some of us have polar opposite beliefs. When recording the immutable laws for your company, they must be your personal values, not a watered-down version of what you think others will want to hear. For example, I believe that in order to get the best out of people, I must first give them my best. I always say that commitment begets commitment. Loyalty begets loyalty, and I believe it. Occasionally, I've been burned, but the vast majority of the time, I have not. That's why my values include give to give and no dicks allowed. I have friends who believe someone must show them loyalty first in order for them to reciprocate. Only when they have seen ferocious loyalty do they give the same in return. They have been burned in the past with this philosophy, but the vast majority of times they have not. Their values include you gotta earn it and prove it. So who's right? Both! And it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you truly believe your own immutable laws and that they are truly consistent with your nature. Look back on your life, ask friends, and do the exercises outlined in finding your life mission. Find your values. I guarantee you've been exercising them all your life already. Document your immutable laws as the rules your company will always abide by, no matter what, every time and at every moment. Remember, this is not about should, this is about what is meaningful to you. So even if people are telling you that your immutable laws are impossible to adhere to, or silly, or useless, hang tight. When things get hairy, or business booms, or both, you'll realize how important those laws are. Immutable laws will keep you on track. You can draw strengths from them in times of crisis, or use them to help you make decisions fast. Community. Finally, at this stage, we start talking about someone else besides you. Well, not really. The community is the people you are serving. you will be delivering something to them that is 100% consistent with your life mission, is 100% moving you toward your destiny. It's extraordinary because of your area of innovation and is consistent with your values. Well, shit, who better consume those things than you and people just like you and people who want to be like you? Exactly. Hands down, you are most capable of connecting with people who share the same values as you and or aspire to be like you and or aspire to be somewhat like you. Now that you know all about you and your wants, what people make up the community that has the wants and needs you can satisfy? These are the people you need to speak to, sell to, and service. Remember, your prosperity plan does not have to be realistic to today's standards. In fact, it absolutely should not be realistic according to what we know to be true today. Nobody believed a man would walk on the moon. It seemed impossible. The stuff of science fiction or fairy tales. And yet a man did walk on the moon. So think and dream big, and don't let concerns about how you will pull it off influence your prosperity plan. Now go write your own prosperity plan. Share it with as many people as possible so that you are forced into accountability. Keep it close by and review it every week. While you may constantly tweak it, the intent of the prosperity plan will never change. Check out the resources page on MikeMichalowicz.com, MikeMichalowicz.com, to download a copy of my prosperity plan, which you can use as a template to create your own. Here's one final tip about your prosperity plan. You know you've got it when reading it makes you cry. Yes, you. Your life's mission, your destiny, all of it should make you blubber like a baby. I don't care how badass you are, discovering your authentic passion is an emotional experience. You've not completed this exercise until you break down and cry. I am not kidding. I got a little choked up there. Always be tacking. The first time I went sailing, I was taught a lesson that was so important and applied so much to business that I jumped off the boat, swam ashore, and started writing it down. The boat floated away into the rocks. I had to pay a lot to repair that boat, so you better freaking listen to this too. When sailing a boat, a sailor needs to know where he is in relation to his destination. He has to know which way the wind is blowing and know that it will occasionally change. Finally, he has to periodically look for obstacles that lay in his path, like other boats or landmasses or the Loch Ness Monster and such. With these few bits of crucial information, he uses a technique called tacking to navigate as quickly as possible to his destination. He knows that he will not follow a straight line. The changing winds alone will not allow for that. Instead, he will travel in a zigzag pattern. By tacking, the sailor travels a short distance, maximizing the winds and avoiding hazards. He then analyzes where he is in relationship to his destination, adjusts the sails, redirects the boat, and continues the zag part of his travels. After another short distance, he again evaluates his relationship to the destination and adjusts. Through a regular reevaluation of his current location and the constant destination, he routinely adjusts his actions to redirect the boat toward the destination. The sailor knows that he won't travel a direct line, but by tacking, he will promptly arrive at his destination regardless of the way the wind blows and regardless of the obstacles in front of him. You will make the greatest progress in your business by tacking. The best tacking method for business is using a quarterly plan, which I will explain shortly. For now, just know that tacking is essential. Pay attention and navigate only in short segments, readjusting to the final destination only periodically. Don't make me waste all that boat repair money for nothing. Quarterly tacking. With your prosperity plan in the can, you now have a big red X showing where you are on the map that is your company's journey, and you know exactly where you need to go and the guidelines you will adhere to in your travels. It's time you put your budding enterprise out on the big blue ocean and sail toward your destination. As your company travels the rough seas of commerce, the winds will change. obstacles will appear, and you will run into enemy ships. The strategy is to navigate the waters safely while making swift progress to your destination. The strategy is to use tacking. By tacking your business, your intention is to travel only a short distance as best as you can in the direction of your goal. The quarterly plan is a one-page, detailed description of what your business must accomplish in the next 90 days to cover the most ground toward its destiny. It documents the three most important, overarching goals that must be accomplished in the next quarter. You do know what a quarter is, right? If not, look it up. The art of proper tacking is to harmonize both speed and distance. Traveling at warp speed in the opposite direction of your destination is of no value. Neither is pointing your ship dead on target, but standing still. You need to consider every goal carefully and employ a balance of distance, speed, and direction. Here's the breakdown of the quarterly plan process. 1. Even if you are well into the current quarter, write a quarterly plan to see you to the end of the quarter. 2. 2 or 3 weeks before the quarter end, commit your full efforts to tie up any loose ends and ensure the completion of the current quarterly plan. 3. With this quarter's goals complete, review your prosperity plan in detail to see where you are in regards to your destiny. 4. Only after you have confirmed where you are at this moment and reviewed your destination do you write the plan for next quarter. 5. Complete this process a few weeks before the start of the next quarter. Repeat the process every quarter. Congratulations, you are tacking your business. The elements of a quarterly plan are simple yet powerful. The ideal is to commit to the 2 or 3 biggest goals that you can realistically complete this quarter that will significantly advance you toward your prosperity plan's destiny. Here are the components of the quarterly plan. 1. Overarching goal. Write down overarching goals for the quarter. They are the overall goals you intend to complete before the end of the quarter. Those that get you closer to your destiny. The goals are not tasks. Throughout the quarter, there will be many tasks related to the accomplishment of overarching goals. Generally, you will have 3 overarching goals every quarter, such as revenue increases, reorganization, or improved employee morale. 2. Overarching goal description. Clarify your goals by describing each one using a few sentences. Again, this is not a list of tasks. It is simply a full description of what needs to be accomplished in the next 90 days. Any colleague at your office must be able to read the description and know exactly what needs to be accomplished. 3. Tasks. Jot down a sequential list of the macro tasks that need to be accomplished in order to achieve each specific overarching goal. Each task must be specific enough so that there is a clear and measurable expectation, yet leave room for the person executing the task to exploit his or her own strengths in accomplishing it. I strongly recommend using SMART tasks, tasks that are S, specific, M, measurable, A, attainable, R, responsible, and T, time specific. S, specific. The goal must have details so that it can be achieved with confidence. A specific goal defines the who, what, where, when, and why. M, measurable. The goal must have specific criteria for measuring progress toward achieving the goal. A, attainable. The goal must be realistic. If you don't believe it's possible, you won't achieve it. Remember, hard work is realistic. R, responsible. Define ways to stay on track with completing the goal. T, time. The goal must have a completion date and time. Without a time frame, there is no sense of urgency, no motivation to accomplish it, because the goal will always be within your time parameters. 4. Target. Set realistic target completion dates for each task and then ensure that they are completed in a timely fashion. Highlight the tasks that have been completed in green and review your progress weekly. 5. Lead. Designate a lead person accountable for completing the task. Note 2 things. First, there can only be 1 person accountable. If you make several people accountable, it will simply result in finger-pointing and he said, she said. Second, this is the person accountable, not necessarily responsible. There is a major difference. Accountable means the person at the end where the buck stops. The lead may elect to delegate responsibilities in part or in whole to others. But when the shit hits the fan, it's his or her problem exclusively. That's it. Develop a quarterly plan for your top three goals for this quarter. Review it, monitor it, and follow it constantly. When the quarter ends, these goals will be accomplished, and it is on to the next, tacking your way to your destiny. Download a copy of the quarterly plan from the resources section on mikemikalowicz.com. Your quarterly plan is something that you need to share with your entire company, but unlike the prosperity plan, this stays confidential to your company and is not distributed. There is no need to give your competitors the details on what you are up to. Hang a copy of the quarterly plan over every person's desk. As tasks on the plan get completed on time, highlight them in green. If they don't get completed, highlight them in red. If they get completed late, highlight them in yellow. I mean this literally. Everyone in your office highlights the task on his or her copy of the quarterly plan. How important is this? It's critical. Everyone in your entire company will know exactly what is going on with the quarterly plan. And since they are the ones marking it up, they are involved even if they are not directly involved. No one wants to see red either, so your team will always be pushing to keep it green. As an added bonus, the highlighting becomes a very simple and quick way to measure your progress. If you have all greens, you are cruising along and may want to set more aggressive goals in the future. Mostly green with a few yellows is great. You got everything done and hopefully pushed to make huge strides. Reds are a no-no. Either you are setting unrealistic goals or you are not committed to your plan. When you see red, you sure as heck better get the roadblocks and problems corrected for next quarter. And remember to celebrate when you achieve your goals for the quarter. Rewards do not have to be expensive or even have any monetary value. Praise and acknowledgement are always welcome and always free. A nice lunch on you ain't too bad either. Every day, review your metrics. Now that you know where your destination is and you have your vessel tacking to it, you need to monitor the ongoing conditions. What if you have a tear in a sail or a big wave damages your boat and that starts filling with water? You need to regularly inspect and or have your crew report on the conditions of the ship. No one promised it would be smooth sailing. Daily metrics are the final component that replaces the lame traditional business plan. Daily metrics are the handful of numbers that instantly identify the health of the company day in and day out. Is cash flow tight? The daily metrics can identify that. Are sales trends strong? The daily metrics can identify that. Is internal productivity dropping significantly? The daily metrics can identify that too. Building on your prosperity plan and your quarterly plan, identify the 3 to 5 most critical numbers you can review every day to ensure you are progressing properly. Each daily metric must be a single number and or gauge and must clearly identify progress toward your prosperity plan and quarterly plan. The metric, if appropriate, can have a plus or minus associated with it to identify if it is an improvement or deterioration from the previous day. For example, all of our clients have a daily metric we call the cash capacity. We get the number by taking our total current cash on hand and dividing it by accounts payable and payroll for the next 60 days. We know that if the number ever drops below 1, we are in a weak cash position. When our cash capacity number is between 1 and 3, we are in a healthy position. If our cash capacity number goes above 3, then we are in a bloated position and we put the money into interest-bearing accounts or make capital investments. Every day, this number and other daily metrics are communicated to our entire company. Every day. The goal of daily metrics is to know your current status as well as to anticipate how future prospects look. For example, a fuel gauge is a daily metric for your car. It indicates the current status, health, of your car, as well as how long you can go before you run out of gas. Your business needs to be monitored the same way. There are hundreds of options for your daily metrics, and a simple Yahoo search, I totally just dished Google, on the terms financial ratios or business ratios will give you 100 more. The idea is to find a simple number that accurately indicates your current business health and predicts the future of your cash, sales, and inventory. Other important aspects that are worthwhile but a bit more difficult to track are client satisfaction, employee morale, and other non-tangible aspects of your business. You don't need to do the obvious here either. You're going for metrics that indicate current and future health, and you want to make it as easy as possible to collect the data. For example, with my first company, we tracked the number of times a new call came into the company the previous day. It didn't matter if it was from a vendor, client, cold call, or even if it was a missed dial. We simply tracked how many calls came in every day. Our receptionist had a clicker and would click it every time someone called. So why was this important? We determined that our call volume tied into our sales, since over time a certain percentage of calls were new prospects. A certain percentage of those prospects became customers, and those customers sent us money. So every day we would report the call numbers. Over time, we learned that a call volume of 3,000 calls in a 30-day rolling period would result in about $150,000 in monthly sales 3 months later. This became a very powerful indicator, since we could predict our sales 3 months in advance simply by the phone ringing. You can imagine the power of knowing what your sales are going to be 3 months from now. You can prepare smartly and manage your cash better. That is the power of metrics. One note, the daily metrics will change over time and may change radically, but typically will not change more than once a quarter. As I said before, the daily metrics need to blend your prosperity plan and the current quarterly plan. When first starting out, you may have all your focus on sales, so your daily metrics relate predominantly to sales. As you grow and bring on new colleagues, your daily metrics may shift to reflect morale or performance factors. Daily metrics are meant to reflect the health of your company, and over time, you will want to monitor other parts of the corporate body. The daily metrics are the most effective way of keeping your finger on the pulse of your company. Studies have shown that when there is an acute focus on a specific number, the number improves. That's the power of keeping your finger on the pulse. Yes, you can download a sample of this too, of course, at www.mikemikalowicz.com. Gold bullion everywhere. In the introduction to this book, I mentioned how emotion is a key factor in absorbing and retaining information. While powerful, remembering to use the daily metrics as a tool may be challenging for you and your staff. At LawLine, an internet-based source for continuing legal education, the daily metrics are in the forefront of the minds of every employee. Why? Because they have a visual example that hits them emotionally every time they see it. LawLine's president, David Schnurman, came up with the idea to motivate his staff using a display case full of gold bullion. Each bullion bar represents $10,000 in annual revenue. As sales accumulate, new bars are added to the stack. A great concept. But here's the genius of David's idea. Every time the company's sales reach 1 million, every staff member is handed a real solid gold bar. That's visual. That's emotional. Employees pass by the gold bullion display in LawLine's reception area several times a day. This keeps them in a near constant state of awareness of the company's daily metric for revenue. How does this system translate to cold hard cash? Since implementing this powerful visual and emotional reminder of the company's daily metrics, LawLine has seen a 600% growth in revenue. David attributes a significant portion of his company's growth to this method of presenting his daily metrics. David Schnurman is a toilet paper entrepreneur. It's just like driving to Albuquerque. Let's say you live in Loco Hills, New Mexico, and want to travel to the big city of Albuquerque. To get started, you would probably figure out exactly where you're going in Albuquerque, whether you are taking a car or bus, how long it will take, where you will stay, and the roads you plan to travel to get there. The planning required for taking a trip is identical to the intention of the prosperity plan. It details the vehicle you will drive, life mission, your destination, and the time you anticipate it will take to get there, destiny, the roads you will travel, area of innovation, the rules of the road, immutable laws, and with whom you will be traveling, community. As you set out from Loco Hills up good old US 82, you'll only be able to see as far as the next turn in front of you. As you travel, 99% of your time will be spent looking out the windshield and making decisions to safely, quickly, and legally get to the next turn. This is identical to the intention of the quarterly plan. Just as when you are driving your car, you need to focus your attention on the road as far as the next turn, avoiding obstacles, adjusting to problems, and most of the time, just keeping the steering wheel steady and the gas pedal properly depressed. During your travels from US 82 all the way to your destination on Interstate 40, you regularly take quick peeks at the fuel gauge, speedometer, and other indicators to make sure all things are as expected. If you start running low on gas, you find the next exit to fill up. This is identical to your daily metrics, where you constantly check the fuel, speed, and health of your overall business. Use the prosperity plan, quarterly plan, and the daily metrics to constantly grow your company the right way. This method is a million times more effective than any business plan and is way more dynamic. It is amazing what you can do with 3 sheets of paper and some numbers. Take action now. If you listened to this entire chapter, you can probably guess what your 3 action steps are. Again, your 3 sheets are living documents. You can always come back and tweak them later on. 1. If you haven't finished it yet or even started it, create your prosperity plan. Remember, it better make you bawl out loud or it's not going to sustain you through those lean, mean, early days of launching a business. 2. Next, bang out a quarterly plan. Keep it simple and realistic. Even if there are only 2 days left in the quarter, don't wait for the next one. You'll be amazed at how much you can get done just because you said you would. 3. Establish daily metrics for your business. Think outside the box to come up with a visual example that will keep you motivated and on track. Part 3. Action. One worthwhile task carried to a successful conclusion is worth half a 100 half-finished tasks. Malcolm S. Forbes. The strategy has been laid out for you. You appreciate the criticality of an enabling mindset and have set the wheels in motion to build it. You have the plans in place and know exactly where you are headed. You know what you need to do in the next 90 days to get there. Now there's one thing left. It's showtime. It's time to put all this stuff into action. Since you are listening to this book, I must assume you are perched